One, two, three, and that counts us in Tucson to our last hour of the week here on the Creative City Show, where Monday through Friday, 10 to 12, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us to that future, a future that is closer around the corner than we realize, with a potential that I believe is greater than we give ourselves credit for most of the time. And part of my job on the show as your host, Zach Yenser, is to back that up and to engage with you, the Tucson and regional community, about that. And I do that through 790-2040. We get to have a live feedback loop 2 hours every day, Monday through Friday, 10 to 12. And if you missed the first hour, I encourage you to jump on kvui.com/podcasts. Or you can go to Google Play Music or iTunes, give it about 24 hours, and listen to the amazing first hour story of entrepreneur and restaurateur Nate Aries. I had no idea we were going to get into what we got into, but I think our first segment especially was his incredible entrepreneurial journey as someone who worked for Sam Fox Restaurants and then jumped out on his own. And if that sounds easy and straightforward, you would be wrong. His startup story is the classic grind and hustle story, and just amazing. It was just an absolutely fun interview. But we're going to close out our Friday by doing our second installment of what I'm calling a deep dive. We did our first with the Worldview Enterprises here in Tucson and talked about that multi-year history, where we do a deep dive where we look to just take an honest, realistic, historic timeline look at a topic that gets a lot of controversy or a lot of heat or a lot of questions. We did that with Worldview Enterprises. And our second installment I'm excited to do today with President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, Amber Smith, on the Tucson Modern Streetcar. There's probably no other topic that lights up our call board like a Christmas tree than transportation topics. And I kept hearing a lot about the streetcar. And so when I hear a lot about something, I want to go back and research it, look at it from beginning to end, top to bottom, backwards and forwards, and to have, like I said, kind of an honest, genuine, realistic look at topics that are talked a lot about, but sometimes not beginning to end, top to bottom, front to back. So that's what we're going to do today. And Amber Smith rarely has a moment of boredom. So I'm excited and grateful that she is in studio with us today to get into it. Again, 790-2040 is your live line call-in number. Amber, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Zach. Thanks for having me.
We're just spending a lot of time on radio these days.
I like it.
I was on your show about a week and a half ago. Thank you for that. We talked about young professionals and Tucson.
Talent attraction, retention.
Yes, it was good.
What are you millennials looking for?
What are we looking for? And for the answer to that, tune in. What's the best way that we can go back and find that podcast episode on, I think it's Business X Radio?
You can go straight to our website at tucsonchamber.org. At the bottom of our homepage, it says On the Radio. You click on that, and it actually has a whole history of the variety of shows that we host at the Chamber.
Super. Definitely go ahead and check that out. But today we're talking about the Tucson Modern Streetcar. Amber, you were, before your role with the Metro Chamber, you were involved in it was the Metropolitan Pima Association looking at, did I get that right?
No.
I did not.
Metropolitan Pima Alliance.
Alliance. There we go. If Allison Solomon is listening, I have coffee with her later today. I will apologize. Metropolitan Pima Alliance. And so you were looking at and working on, as you do now, regional issues.
Specific to land use.
Specific to land use. The background of the streetcar from an economic development perspective. Tell us about the conversation that's all the way back in the day, especially related to the RTA.
So the streetcar actually originated, like you just said, for the RTA as part of the huge 30-year plan that was put forth to the voters. And historically, our community, that was the first regional transportation plan we were able to pass after, goodness, four or five were put forth prior to that. During the time that we passed one plan, Phoenix passed three. Hmm. And I think that that's an important distinction, because there's constant complaints about Tucson. Why do our roads look like that? Why is Phoenix so much better, et cetera, as related to transportation? And that's because they were able to find compromise and get their act together three decades prior to us. So during that process, there was extensive community outreach as to what would you like to see in a plan. And the prior plans that had not passed either didn't pass because there was no crosstown freeway, or because it did have a crosstown freeway, because it was all just for light rail or whatever they called it back then. And really, this plan that was passed by the voters had something for everyone. And while that approach doesn't work every time, in this case, it passed significantly by the voters. And what it was is thousands of people participated. What would you like to see? And the crosstown freeway, of course, is still not a part of it, but the expansion of Grant and River Road expansion and things like that were included, just like the streetcar was included, because there were some very strong, vocal citizens that felt both were important. And ultimately, the whole package ended up on the ballot in a very, very transparent process. And then that plan has been put forth over the last 20 years, a billion-dollar plan just about, related to roadway safety measures, street widening. And there is a misconception about we don't have the ability to use the funds for maintenance. It is true that the only way we can use the current collected RTA funds is for those specific projects that were approved by the voters. If we were to create a new plan, we do have the ability to make maintenance a part of it. And so I say all of that to get back to the fact that having the streetcar approved by the voters and funded partially on that process was part of a significant community-wide effort.
And it was a part of that $2.1 billion regional
transportation plan. You're right, it was 2.1, I said a billion, yep.
Oh, okay. No, that was
no, you're right. It was $2.1 billion. Right now, we have about $1 billion in probably needs right now.
Okay. By Pima County voters in May of 2006.
Yes.
And the RTA funded the project, as you said.
Partially.
Partially. There's multiple funding streams for it, along with federal and other regional funds, and co-managed the project with the city of Tucson.
Yeah. I think it was $500 million, perhaps, came from the Tiger Grant from the federal government. Being able to receive a Tiger Grant in general across the country is a major feat. And so we have the congressional delegation at that time to thank, as well as the city and all the parties that helped make that happen. And so as part of the condition when you receive a Tiger Grant is you have to have matching funds. And we were able to do that.
And that was am I correct? And that was the largest Tiger Grant ever awarded at that point in time.
Could be.
I believe it was the Tiger Grant. I believe so. And I was looking at something that, in 2010, Tucson was the nation's largest Tiger Grant recipient. And
that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. There was federal funding sources for it, local funding sources, and other funding sources. We've talked about Tiger. We've talked about the city's contribution. Do you have kind of a broad maybe list of some of the other funding sources that contributed to it? I think it was I think the city received, was it $73 million in Federal Transit Administration funding for the streetcar route? I think it was like a $150 million project overall.
I think you're right. I mean, because you have to think about all of the infrastructure underneath that had to get in place. I mean, putting something like that in downtown, which obviously is an older part of our community, allowed for the opportunity to update the communication lines underneath, water lines, et cetera. So that dollar amount sounds about right.
And I know when it comes to the to the, you know, one of the themes, and we'll get into this a little bit later. One of the themes that I hear a lot, and I'm sure you do too, Amber Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, is, you know, are we getting the biggest bang for taxpayer dollars? And it's interesting that only a small portion of the streetcar was paid for with city funding. You know, now, yes, federal funding sources comes from taxpayer dollars.
Sure.
You know, RTA, you know, past funding comes from taxpayers. So, you know, certainly it would be inaccurate to say, you know, that the city of Tucson, you know, your sales tax dollars footed the whole $150 million. So I think it was something like roughly $75 million in transit administration dollars, $75 million from the RTA, and that together was about 75% of the total costs of the...
Well, in general, there is no city in America that's not subsidizing public transportation. I mean, that's just a reality. So there are also user fees that you can say as far as the ongoing cost contributing towards it. But really, it was not general fund dollars is basically what you're getting at.
Because we don't have those general fund dollars.
It's hard to create something out of nothing.
You know, I often ask, you know, listeners to call in 790-2040 about this. I've looked at recent City of Tucson general fund budgets, and I personally, and I'm willing to be wrong on this. This mm-hmm. is just my view. I personally can't find a lot of margin where I can say, you know, for this line item, it's a ballooned expenditure. They shouldn't be spending this. It shouldn't be going there. It should be going here. I just can't find a ton of wiggle room out of our general fund. Maybe that's not a nuanced enough view.
No, I think that there was a time that it was pretty easy, honestly. And because we went through the exercise at MPA, and it was actually Michael Guyman, who's one of my VPs now at the chamber, was actually my boss at MPA. And our organization, as well as others, did a deep dive into the city budget. And we itemized out many millions of dollars that we felt were unnecessarily spent and should have been prioritized towards core services. Now, if we went through the exercise, it is a bit more challenging. And I think that... it's conveniently ignored often in talking about how government is spending money and forgetting that 20% within the city limits is living in poverty. And these are not individuals that are, you know, just draining the system. I mean, these are folks that have double incomes, are working multiple jobs, and are at or below the poverty line, the working poor, genuinely. And they obviously aren't able to contribute as much into our taxpayer system. But that's 20% of the population. So we don't have enough wealth on the top end to try to balance that out. So government is going to be relied on for things like public transportation.
That's a good point. Before we go to our first break, let's finish out maybe some of the backgrounds. We talked about some of the funding, and you know, on the one hand, I think this is valuable to say some of the numbers I'm looking at. I wish I could say I'm just like this crack, you know, journalist media guy that does the deep digging and finds the numbers. I'm on sunlinkstreetcar.com/history, right? You know,
sure.
you know, if I was talking about an opinion from this, you know, from the sunlinkstreetcar.com, you know, or I was stating, you know, views based on that, that might be a little weird. But I'm just looking at the numbers. There is a budget breakdown, streetcar costs and funding sources. I think I got to say this just for the value of the conversation.
Sure.
This is public information. It's easily findable. And it breaks down the federal, local, and other funding sources that went into the Tucson modern streetcar. So if there's anything that we didn't hit on precisely, you can find out how much came from the Tiger Grant. You can find what came from the RTA. You can find what came from PAG and other grant funding, and even from the Gadsden Company on the West End Station. So this stuff is out there to look at. And I think part of the job of this show is just to point in that direction. So that's what we're doing. But Amber Smith, CEO, president of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, whenever I hear Mayor Walkup, it's even to this day, talk about the Tucson Modern Streetcar, it really seemed like the drum that he was banging on behalf of the city was that for Tucson to begin to thrive as a city, as a region, this was always the talking point, that the U of A needed to be connected to the downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's been my impression, and I really hope you can correct and nuance this if it needs to be corrected and nuanced, is that that was the phase one of the streetcar. That was its main job, was to be a 3.9-mile route that connected U of A students with the downtown area. Was that the big picture, or just was that the main talking point that got it moving?
No, that was for sure the big picture. I mean, you can even go down that rabbit hole even a little bit further and look at the development along the streetcar, to where the 4th Avenue underpass was realigned in order to accommodate the streetcar as well as the first set of dorms that came into downtown by the private sector. And I think that that was really the catalyst that occurred after the streetcar was put in, is because of that necessary, purposeful connectivity to the U, which is a major employer just in itself. You can look at the employment, but then, of course, the students. And there was an effort as well in moving some of the U of A classes downtown, which makes a ton of sense. I mean, look at my master's, public administration. You have the same master's, I think, too, public administration policy.
I don't.
You don't? Well, you should. That's
I
a
should.
Good one you should get at the U.
But thanks for thinking that. I appreciate it.
But there's that degree, which is essentially a master's on nonprofit and government. So where better to be able to hold classes than right there where government is working?
Right. And you know, we're going to talk, I think, in a later segment, at least my opinions. I don't know if you're willing to give your thoughts, Amber. I think it needs to be expanded, and I have ideas where that should go. You know, but the whole point of it was in the beginning to be a student-serving resource. Another number that I found that ties to this, and I often hear, why is so much student housing being built? And I have that thought too, honestly, is I found this number the other day, that the plan is by 2025 for the University of Arizona to enroll 60 to 65,000 students. Within the last decade, it's been more along the line of 40 to 45,000 students. And so that's almost a 50% increase in the next 6 years. And I don't know if that validates more the whole vision of the streetcar as a primary connection between the downtown and the U of A. But I thought that was an interesting number to throw out there. That,
yeah, it's
that
a
the
big
U of A
number.
Is going to grow by 50% in the next 5 years. Is what
I mean, it's a goal. I mean, who knows what the reality is? But consistently, student housing has been in high demand by the U. I mean, I went to the U 20 years ago. And one of the reasons why I ended up there versus ASU is because I was allowed to have an apartment instead of living in a dorm. I mean, because there was such high demand and not enough supply. And there is a lot. But quite frankly, these dorms that are going up are by private companies, and they don't make these decisions in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. So the demand is there. I'm sure that they are watching those projections closely. And under the leadership of Dr. Robbins, I have no doubt that if that's where he wants to take the U, then he's going to get there.
One last element of the Tucson Modern Streetcar that we should probably mention as well. We'll get into the numbers of this in the next segment. But there's a lot to say about the confidence that it gives businesses to be along a route that's not going to go anywhere, for better or for worse. Was that a part of the picture of saying, look, if you have a 3.9-mile streetcar route,
okay,
that is rails, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe
no, go on. I'm trying to follow the rationale, but keep going.
Well, this is what I've heard. This has at least been the other talking point, is that businesses won't want to move into downtown, that the economic development has been in the billions after the streetcar because of the confidence created along an immovable route that supposedly people are going to be stopping in and coming out of. And that's at least been a talking point. Buy or sell, Amber Smith, CEO, president of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce.
I haven't heard that once from a single business. I mean, everything that I have heard.
This is a major talking point.
Yeah, I mean, Okay. Sure.
Amber Smith is selling.
I'm not going to doubt the fact that someone out there has said it and people might believe that. But as someone that has been in the land use industry for 15, 20 years, was a part of the stakeholder committees on the RTA as chairperson of the RTA CART committee, and then now running the Chamber of 1,500 businesses, I have never heard that argument. Okay. Have I heard, parking? I don't want to move into downtown because there's no parking. Of course, we know that there is parking and that that's a myth as well. But I've heard that. But this idea that I'm not going in because there's a streetcar there that goes nowhere, I've never heard that correlation.
Okay. This is good. So what I've been saying as we've entered into these deep dive conversations is that it would be a disservice if it was only a kind of surface level or a hype session. It's like we want to have a real look at it. We're going to get into some of those numbers. I have questions.
There's a few. Let's talk about the success of what makes a streetcar. Is if the streetcar, if all things equal and nothing happens along the route, no expansion of the streetcar, would the streetcar be successful? Probably not. I mean, because you need to have certain things in place and certain political decisions made for the success of it.
Hmm. So that's where we're going to go in the next segment. That's an amazing segue. And we're not even looking at the same notes, which is awesome. is I want to talk about, okay, so that was the path. That's how we got here. That's what it was meant for.
And it was a compromise. I mean, and I think that just to reiterate again, when the RTA plan was created, it was because there were some very definite opinions, strong opinions on both sides of the issue. Some that wanted a streetcar, and then some who absolutely were against a streetcar and wanted to widen our roads in a crosstown freeway. So obviously there's going to be disagreements even today. Those conversations were held in building the plan. Ultimately, both interests were included as part of it. Tens of thousands of people participating in the extremely extensive outreach. So no doubt there's still going to be folks that are going to be on both sides. One is going to say we should only be on public transportation, and some that are going to say we, need to have a crosstown freeway going over the Rito or whatever the arguments are. So
right. That's a good point.
And I don't think we'll ever change the opinions of either of those camps.
It's a good point. And we're not going to try to, but this is an hour where we are wanting to hear those sides and to have that conversation. So if you're listening, have questions, have thoughts, find yourself in one of those camps, want to join in on the conversation, 520-790-2040. And I would say this, if Amber Smith, CEO, president of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, wasn't sitting in front of me, there's very few people involved in public policy that I have met in Tucson that is as fast on their feet and as straightforward in responding to questions and concerns. We've had her on the show before. And so definitely 790-2040, great conversation to join in. When we come back, we're going to talk about the present. What do the numbers look like? What's been the economic growth around the streetcar? What did the streetcar help bring to the community? We're going to talk about the present. And then when we get through that, to close out the hour, we'll talk about the future of the Tucson modern streetcar. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the show here where we are wrapping up our week with a deep dive hour on the Tucson modern streetcar with President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, Amber Smith, where we take some of these big topics and we look at them top to bottom, backwards and forwards, side to side, and have an honest and realistic conversation that's based on facts and numbers about topics that are still often disputed or talked about have in some ways become folklore. I don't know if the streetcar fits into that, but I think there are topics where that is the case. So I'm excited that I get to do this with Amber Smith. 790-2040 is your opportunity to join in on our conversation. There's usually not another topic that lights up our call board quite like transportation. And in fact, your calls about the streetcar over the last couple months spurred this conversation where we wanted to just kind of look at it across its timeline and speak to it. But take your thoughts, 790-2040. 2040. So Amber Smith, can you at least kick us off with talking about the impact of the Tucson modern streetcar, both from an economic development perspective, but also transit-oriented development as well?
So there was definite demand. We saw that with the RTA. And the amount of development that has directly occurred due to its existence, the dorms, we talked about that. So that helps the U of A survive and thrive. The construction jobs created on that. And of course, we can't just keep relying on construction jobs, right? We already got into that jam. That's why the recession hit us so hard, is because we focus so much on that industry. But it is a reality. When we have big new businesses come in, it creates jobs immediately. So there is that. And what's the figure? $1 billion, I think, that was several years ago, I heard.
I think it's up to two is recent.
So that makes sense, because that was probably at least 5-6 years ago that I heard. Everything that is happening, I mean, right now, downtown on a Saturday night, you need dinner reservations, period. And whether or not you agree with the streetcar coming in, it was absolutely, unequivocally, the huge catalyst. TEP locating downtown, the dorms coming in, restaurants opening up more. I've worked in downtown, when I first got out of college for a few years. So this was back after late 90s. It was a ghost town. I worked for Senator McCain over at the Manning Park, Manning, whatever, right there off of Granada. We never went into downtown, ever, for lunch or otherwise. And a few years later, 10 years later, officed again downtown, different community. All of a sudden, there were some things. I mean, a few things, and it was quaint. 10 years after that, holy cow. I mean, you have a laundry list of restaurants to go to. We have a grocery store down there. Like I said, you need reservations. But it was $2 billion investment is a real thing. And even without even looking at the dollar amount, the energy and vibe and feel down there is completely visible. We have Hexagon Mining has located down there. Caterpillar. Let's talk about Caterpillar. It was a deliberate decision to locate on the west side of I-10 connecting to the modern streetcar.
Was a part of their decision-making
absolutely.
Process. Okay.
I mean, they wanted to be a part of be in the downtown area. I mean, what more of a testimonial would folks need, the fact that the streetcar does matter in those decisions?
The other thing as well, we talked about dorms, we talked about businesses. The money has since dried up, but I can speak to this from living on the west side. There's a lot, so a lot of that either senior living or affordable housing along the streetcar
sure.
line,
mm-hmm.
and to some extent, probably some of the apartment and mm-hmm. And rental units that are downtown, really were able to be put in through transit-oriented development,
yep.
I think federal funding and grants. Since that has all been built out, that money is pretty much dried up. But for a few year period of time, there was some really important additions to our housing supply and stock that came in because of the streetcar. Has that been kind of true in what you've been watching?
It is. You can look over at the Mercado as well. When I was with MPA, there's an annual event called Wild Ride, and we toured that housing community, and we actually spoke to the residents, Eastsiders, that sold off their houses, moved into the Mercado so that they could then have access on the streetcar, ride it into downtown, and office at co-working spaces. Family people, you know, with kids in elementary and middle school. So right there, housing has absolutely contributed. And you and I just talked about that when referring back to the business radio show that folks can see on our website, is housing still remains an issue. Tucson Association of Realtors has really been exploring this idea of homeownership in downtown. You have the Mercado, but the price point of those homes are for a higher echelon, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Rentals are growing in downtown proper with a couple of the different establishments. Where are the condos?
Right.
You know, and there is absolute high need or high demand for condos there. And there are several affordable housing options through the MLK building. I'm trying to think of the different names of them, but Hulualoa has done a great job at really trying to answer that market. And HSL is going into downtown. Again, these huge complexes for hundreds of people. We just have got to get some higher density home ownership in downtown, again, to make all of this work.
Right. And when we talk about adding more housing in, I mean, this is not the only component that contributes to affordability and accessibility, but supply has to meet demand, which is
right.
what you're speaking
right.
to. And when there's not enough, that's when the demand is high enough to where you can charge the rates that are being charged. And so more appropriate housing development really keeps costs
more diverse.
More diverse, absolutely. When we speak to condos, I mean that's a piece of the diversity
that's
of housing
right.
that we just don't have.
Because you have single family from the barrio to some of the affordable housing options and then the Mercado, but yes, condos specifically is needed.
I have a couple things that are putting question marks in my head that I'd love to throw out there and get your thoughts. But one thing that I hear a lot, especially on the air here, from those who may live, you know, Foothills, East Side, you know, maybe Oro Valley, Marana, more on a regional level, but certainly maybe just within city limits, maybe live a little bit north, a little bit east, a little bit south, is that there just seems to be a ton of investment into downtown. And, you know, again, a lot of RTA dollars, federal dollars, some city dollars. I'm just kind of creating the conversation point. And it's a 3.9-mile, you know, streetcar that is mostly for students. It's half used by students. What does that mean for me living on the east side or maybe, you know, along river or whatever the case may be? How would you answer that question in terms of the value of downtown, the streetcar for the broader community?
Well, I think it goes back to looking at the original vision. This isn't the whole plan. And it's a supply and demand argument again, is if there is demand from the east side to expand the streetcar, perhaps that's part of the next RTA plan. I mean, and not to say that it is or that's what I've heard or whatever, but those options are available. This is one phase of it. I know, what about the idea of the tech park? You know, if we want to talk about those employment centers, running the streetcar to where you're along Campbell, going all the way to the top of, you know, Campbell, all the way down to the tech park and airport and those industrial major job center hubs. I mean, Rome was not built in a day, and we can't expect that because we laid, you know, 4 miles of streetcar, all things are going to be perfect, and all of a sudden it's going to be the most amazing development along it. Have we had great development? Absolutely. Is it complete? Not at all. And for anyone to assume that that was the intent, it's just not realistic.
Hmm. Do you think that's communicated well enough as a city,
no.
as a region?
No, I don't. And I think we are hyper-focused on downtown in our conversations. I would agree. And I don't live downtown either, right? I live on a ranch on the northwest side. Do I ride the streetcar? Yeah, if I'm downtown, I do. But otherwise, I get it. And I'm paying property taxes and sales tax like everyone else. But again, this is major infrastructure that for it to be successful will require continuous dialogue from the citizens to expand it where it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And regionally, the amount of investment that has then come into downtown, that has a multiplier effect across the region. To those that aren't even participating. And it would be difficult to ignore that. That $2 billion of investment right there allows those resources to come in that offset some of those other public dollar costs.
Gotcha. You know, a couple of things. Let's just touch on this and get to any of our calls before we head to our last segment. A couple of things I had a listener say as we were getting into this morning, kind of questioning maybe some of the stops of the streetcar. Why might the streetcar not go to McHale and the stadium? You know, I think as of last year, the streetcar had serviced about 4 million people, 4 million rides over, I think it was a 4-year period. It looks like it's, the first 2 years had 2 million. And so it looks like it's about 1 million riders per year. It seems a little bit empty. 50% of the ridership is students. So, I mean, again, getting back to that bigger term view, Anything that you might say to some of those concerns, and maybe how ridership across the board hasn't really caught up yet over a 4 or 5 year period?
It's not a perfect science. As we add more to downtown and more companies advance, and again, the strengthening the relationship between the U and the city and driving ridership, that'll help. But we need to find out what's the why.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that someone is looking into that for the city. But I think that that's really interesting. And I wonder if that is a trend across the country. Is this just us in Tucson? How does that relate to what we are doing on SunTran? Public transportation is complicated. It's expensive and it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, back to we got into housing just a touch. You know, if we and this is why I'm so bullish on housing. If we have Caterpillar and Hexagon and Mad Media and some of these growing companies that are growing in and out of downtown, you know, but we don't make it easy for those employees to live,
That's right.
A 1, 2, 3, 4 mile radius around mm-hmm. the city, then why are we surprised that you know, the only streetcar main usage, and maybe it's not, but what it seems to be, is weekend traffic and students. If we're not going to make sure that we're investing over the long haul in that whole ecosystem of downtown and transit and the streetcar, you know, then we're going to keep seeing that. But I mean, to your point, Ember Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, I have been troubled lately more and more of how we don't have conversations in the city that say, okay, what are we building now for the next 20 or 30 years? I got to ask, I had a mixer that the four mayoral candidates participated in, and I was kind of the moderator. And my kickoff question was, what is the Tucson of 2055 that you see? And how does that inspire why you're running and what you're doing now? Because, you know, the mayor of next year
I love that question.
Is crafting a city, whether they know it or not, and I think most of them do, I'm not being critical,
sure.
just whether they know it or not, that will shape what my kids and grandkids, you know, will be living
sure.
in 2055. And it just feels like Tucson as a mentality is often very short-term driven, very scarcity driven.
Reactive.
And very reactive because of that.
Reactive
and doesn't
and not
have
proactive.
That long-term tail.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And those that are driving the decisions need to reflect those that that we need to encourage here. So let's talk workforce development, traction, retention.
You talk about that just a little bit.
I know.
Smith.
I could talk about it for hours, as you know. So as baby boomers continue to retire, as a country, we are not producing enough people to offset those numbers, right or wrong. I mean, that's not a political statement. That is just a factual census-based statement. So knowing that, the number of jobs is still the number of jobs necessary. So how are we going to fill positions? And Tucson is competing across the country, really the world, but especially across the country, and being able to attract talent to come here to fill positions. Because that right there is the true future of our community. Is if we don't have workers filling these jobs, we're going to end up being that sleepy town again. And we are having to compete with very forward-thinking, innovative cities, Denver, Austin, Portland. And how are we going to do that? And so while we have to respect our past and those that have worked in our community and continue to contribute to our community, but as they are retiring, we have to be thinking forward. We have to be thinking about those who are, we want to be filling positions, and that's going to be the younger generations. It's just the reality and the demographics, what they are telling us. So those are the individuals that we need to reach out to. It's going to be the millennials and the Gen X and Z and Y and whatever all of these, you know, names are provided to these generations. We must get that feedback, and we've got to have those very strong relationships with the university and the college, and hearing what do these type of students, graduates, participants in the different certifications are looking for. And so far, we've seen public transportation being right there in the dynamic downtown. And that's why we're hyper-focused on downtown.
Mm.
And then there's a trickle effect, is the more thriving the downtown is and the more commerce we're able to grow there, it has absolute impacts on the rest of our community and our ability to do great things and retain what we have and preserve what we have.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a large percentage of the kind of the creative tech, science, art, you know, legal economy being really driven out of the downtown core. And that's important to keep remembering. Well, again, Amber Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, you segued us really well into the final segment of our show, where we talk about the future of the Tucson Modern Streetcar. As the housing around it, the funding for that has dried up, as we're looking to expand usage, as we're talking about expansion of the streetcar through the city, or maybe to the stadium, to McHale Center, whatever the case may be, what does that look like? What is that future forward part now? We talked about past, we talked about present. What does the future look like for the Tucson Modern Streetcar? Let's, before we head to our final break, we have a caller on line two. We have Mike on line two with a question or comment about the Tucson Modern Streetcar and the overall conversation we're having. Mike, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, wherever I travel, I really like taking light rail, modern streetcars, or whatever. The Tucson system is so stupidly built. Maybe he didn't have the money to continue it. My wife and I are fortunate. My wife's retired from the University of Arizona, so she has lifetime parking at U of A. There's nowhere to park. If one wanted to do on the whatever it's called, the east side by the university, there's nowhere to get on it. So there's absolutely no way that an average person can take the light rail, the modern streetcar, from the university side towards downtown or any further. There's nowhere to park. And I've never seen a light rail anywhere that doesn't have parking. So it's not unexpected that only students can use it. There's no way in the world that an average person could use it. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for your call. Amber Smith, I hear this quite a bit. What is there parking enough near the streetcar?
There's the parking garage right there on University, as well as a streetcar stop. And then there's also parking over by the banner side of University as well. So I'm surprised to hear that comment. I would agree it would probably make more sense if the streetcar went on the heart of the university, but it is very definitely stops next to the garages along the perimeter of the university.
And Ian, This is something I think really important, though, as a feedback point, because I hear this a lot. There is still a lot of work that I think Park Tucson mm-hmm. and the city can do, and they'll admit that. This is fine to say on the air that there's a lot of garage parking, a lot of surface parking that's mm-hmm. developing, but for some reason, to Mike's point, we haven't cracked the code. We really haven't on making that easy for people to park in and to know about. And perception is reality.
It's
in
true.
My mind, in anything public policy, land use related, perception is reality.
Sure,
whatever is perceived is true. And I appreciate Mike calling in on that, because even though there's a couple of parking spaces that you were able to, garages, garages that are available, there's still that feel that it's not. And again, to Mike's point, when I moved into the West Side, there was a whole Gadsden property that used to be a park and ride, basically. There's a whole dirt lot that is now being developed that used to be, you could park there, you could ride the streetcar, you could even, park there for lunch, take the streetcar somewhere, and that is gone. And at least on the west, I know Mike was talking about the university side. On the west side, I think Mike's got a really valid point.
Yeah, I can't think of where, now that that parking lot is gone, so what's the point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, thank you for your call. It might be a little easier on the university side. It might turn out, but I think you have a great point on the west side. And I know Gadsden is thinking about that, but I'm not quite sure what the plan is there. I think there's going to be some parking garage, underground parking built, so that might be good. But great point, Mike. Thank you. I appreciate it. 790-2040 is your live line to do the absolute same. Give us a call. We're going to go to our last break and finish up the hour by talking about the future of the Tucson Modern Streetcar. And it might include, better information, more parking, more garages. We'll be right back, Tucson. You're on 1030 The Voice. Come on back as we wrap up with Amber Smith, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. Tucson, welcome back to the show. This hour has flown by. We got about 5 minutes left. We've been talking the past, the present, the future of the Tucson Modern Streetcar as part of our deep dive series and our overall series about transportation in Tucson and the region. We have both the city and county departments of transportation coming on the show next week, and that will be part 3 and 4 of what looks to be a 5-part transportation series here on the Creative City Show. Many thanks to Amber Smith, CEO and President of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, for helping to bring a lot of those conversations to the show. Amber, what is the future of the Tucson modern streetcar? Even if you, I know you're involved in some of those conversations, if you take that hat off and even just your futurist Tucson, you know, Tucson look. Do you know, in the 80s, we talked about Campbell being a crosstown, you know, freeway highway system. There's been so many of these along the way. Would an expansion of the streetcar help to meet some of those needs in the 21st century?
I think so. I think there's a couple of things. One is we have to have density along the streetcar, period. I mean, that is what ultimately is going to support it. Expansion, you know, Queen for a day, I'd love to see it continue up Broadway to be able to connect the east side. And I'd especially love it connecting the airport and the tech park. But there is this whole idea of being the residential. How are we going to connect them as part of it?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just think that it has to go, you know, we do a what if hour on the show once a week. One of my first what ifs, it might be more light rail, so this might be a little bit off the topic, but I've thought even down the road, it'd be great to connect the Oro Valley Innovation
Center
that's developing with
to the tech park.
Yeah. And that would be innovative for Tucson. That'd be pretty run of the mill for, I think for a lot of places that are actually connecting some of these hubs and not seeing them as separated as we have, and creating that linkage for talent and ideas. I don't know. It's a big idea.
To me, it sounds incredibly expensive, so it's hard for me to get past that. In reality, I was like, okay, maybe if you're going to invest money like that, why don't we get a train between Tucson and Phoenix?
I would not be opposed to that either.
So I think that we have to extend it. I mean, I think that the comment earlier, while I haven't heard anything about the streetcar to nowhere, from businesses at least, I mean, I've heard it from the naysayers, we have to expand it. I mean, there is no doubt, and who knows which direction it should, but it's about connecting people to places. So as a community, let's figure out what those places are and who those people are that'll use it.
Absolutely. And I don't think that we could go into too much more detail than saying, you know, students are one piece of this. If we want to look to increase ridership, I think it comes to informing where parking can happen if you're not in the downtown area already. I think it gets back to density and having more people who are actually living and working downtown versus just either working in or visiting in, and the expansion. Anything else, Amber? I think that covers it. Anything before we take off?
I don't think so. I thank you for having me.
No, I appreciate you being a part of this conversation and catalyzing a lot of it. Tucson, I hope this was valuable. If you missed any of the last hour, go to kvui.com/podcasts or iTunes or Google Play Music and check out the full hour of our deep dive, part of a 5-part series on transportation in our region, and a deep dive on the Tucson modern streetcar. We'll stick around for the next hour. We're continuing with live and local talk here on 1030 The Voice with the Bill Buckmaster Show. Segment 1 and 2, Tim Tomier, Tucson Water Director, comes in along with Sarah Gasson and Joe Ferguson of The Star, and so much more. Stick around for your lunch hour with Bill Buckmaster. That's it for us. Tucson will be back. And again, next week, related to transportation, both the county and city voices on transportation will be in studio to continue this. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Thanks for engaging. This is Zach Yenser. This has been the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice, sharing the stories and strategies of people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday.